How the Maharishi Came to Me by Chaganlal V. Yogi, Part 2, continued from the November-December 1993 issue. In our last issue, we read how Chaganlal Yogi, the skeptic, became a believer and how the Maharishi showed him in a dream to whom he should sell his business and for what price. As the story continues, we now read how he is led into a different business, printing for Sri Ramanashramam. My original plan had been to sell all my property in Bombay and move directly to Sri Ramanashramam. However, when the devotees heard what I was planning to do, it was suggested to me that I could be of more use to the ashram in Bangalore. I was asked to start a printing press there, which could execute all of Sri Ramanashramam's printing work. I agreed to the idea and soon found myself in Bangalore looking for suitable premises. I began to suspect that Sri Bhagavan had assisted the sale of my original press because he had work for me to do in Bangalore. I was a stranger in the city, but I soon located an old press which had been lying idle for the previous 6 months. It was for sale. I saw its proprietor and told him why I wished to buy his business. He agreed to sell it to me, but we were unable to agree on a price. To break a deadlock, I proposed that both of us should visit the ashram and suggested that we could talk about the deal after we had had Sri Bhagavan's darshan. I thought that since Sri Bhagavan wanted me to do this work in Bangalore, his darshan might help to lubricate the wheels of the transaction. The owner agreed to the idea, so we set off together for Sri Ramanashramam. On arrival, I took him into the holy presence of Sri Bhagavan and informed him that I proposed to buy the press of the gentleman who was accompanying me and that I planned to do all the ashram's printing work there. Sri Bhagavan did not say anything. He just nodded his head. Within a few hours of having had Sri Bhagavan's darshan, there was a wonderful change in the attitude of the owner of the press. He approached me and agreed to sell his press for whatever price I was willing to pay for it. I stated a reasonable amount since I did not want to exploit him, and he happily accepted my offer. When he had agreed to come and see Sri Bhagavan with me, he had made a stipulation that no business talks should take place at the ashram. However, after seeing Sri Bhagavan, he proposed that we settle our business immediately. We drafted and signed a sale agreement in the ashram itself, and within a week of our visit, the press came into my possession. It was a fairly big press which enabled me to do all kinds of printing work in several languages. Because of the good facilities that were available there, I undertook to print ashram books in English, Tamil, Hindi, Gujarati, and Kannada. The press, which was given the name Aruna Press by Sri Bhagavan, had been idle for 6 months. It needed a lot of work to get it functioning again. But by Sri Bhagavan's grace, I was soon able to take up the ashram work that had been given to me. In 1946, the devotees of Sri Bhagavan decided to celebrate a golden jubilee to commemorate Sri Bhagavan's 50 years at Arunachala. He had arrived on 1st of September 1896, and on that same date in 1946, the ashram proposed to mark the occasion by a number of special events, one of which was the publication of a book entitled The Golden Jubilee Souvenir. The printing of this souvenir was entrusted to my press. Up till then, the press had only printed small books for the ashram. Since this was going to be a big volume of several hundred pages, I was initially reluctant to accept the work because I felt that I would not have enough time to complete it. However, once I overcame my diffidence and accepted the commission, help and cooperation began to pour in. Since some of it was wholly unexpected, I suspected that Sri Bhagavan's divine grace was again at work. At first, my initial fears appeared to be justified. When only 10 days remained before the publication date, I had still not managed to print more than a small part of the book. I temporarily lost my courage and rushed off to the ashram. I prostrated before Sri Bhagavan, told him about the lack of progress, and informed him that unless the help of some other press is taken, the volume will not come out on the 1st of September. I sat before him, enjoying his darshan, waiting for his reply. After a few moments of silence, he said in a low, melodious tone, "Do your work." These three simple words had a magical effect on me. They fired me with fresh vim and vigor, and there arose in my heart a strong belief that the volume would surely be out on the scheduled date. I had received my orders from my master. I had simply to obey and do my work. I had faith that all the other details would be looked after by him. I returned to Bangalore and told the story of my experience at Sri Ramanashramam to my co-workers in the press. All of them accepted Sri Bhagavan's order in the same spirit as I had done. For the next few days, all of us worked day and night with full faith, zeal, and enthusiasm. The amount of work turned out in those last 10 days was, in retrospect, quite astonishing. Then, when 3 days remained till our deadline, a party of about 10 devotees came to my house on its way to the ashram. They were going there to attend the Golden Jubilee celebrations. Three of them turned out to be expert bookbinders. I immediately enlisted their aid and managed to complete the work of the souvenir a day early. Between 1945 and 1947, the Aruna Press printed all the publications of Sri Ramanashramam. The work was complex, and I often found myself having to argue with the official at Sri Ramanashramam who had been put in charge of the publications. The tension between us increased to the point where both of us decided that we should go to Sri Bhagavan to get our differences resolved. The rest interval between noon and 2:30 p.m. was chosen for our meeting because we wanted to be alone with him. We went to the hall at noon and waited outside for him to return from lunch. On his way back, he saw both of us waiting for him. Sensing that we had some business to discuss, he took his seat on the big stone couch outside the hall. My friend immediately started to present his side of the dispute. However, it soon occurred to him that Sri Bhagavan was not comfortable sitting outside on this stone bench. He stopped in the middle of his plea, folded his hands in a respectful way, and requested Sri Bhagavan to go inside the hall. He said that the business should be conducted with Sri Bhagavan seated comfortably on his sofa. Sri Bhagavan dismissed the appeal with a smile, saying, "What is wrong with the seat? Was there a soft bed and sofa when I was up there?" pointing to the hill. "Up there, the bare stones served as my bed as well as my seat." It was clear that in our unseemly haste and our anxiety to plead our respective cases, we had been responsible for causing this discomfort to him. Feeling very guilty about this, I felt very embarrassed when my friend's request was turned down. In an anguished voice, I begged Sri Bhagavan to follow the advice. "No, Bhagavan, no, that won't do," I said. "It is our earnest prayer that you should not sit here in the hot sun. We will resume our talk only after you go into the hall and sit comfortably on the sofa." This time, he accepted the advice. He got up, went inside, and, as requested, sat on his sofa. Both of us then placed our cases before him. He quietly listened to us and gave his verdict in the language of silence. Smiling with great charm, he maintained complete silence, both during and after the presentation of the arguments. The judgment was the best possible one for both of us. Sri Bhagavan's silence had healed the breach. As we emerged from the hall, both of us had a spontaneous impulse to embrace the other. In those few minutes, our hearts had changed. We separated with the resolve to bury the past and to treat each other in the future with love and friendship. The silken tie with which Sri Bhagavan bound us on that day has never snapped again. Sometimes in life, there is a clash between two competing obligations, especially if both seem to be equally important. At such times, it is rather difficult to arrive at the right decision. It has been my experience that at such times, our gracious master leads us to the proper decision. I will give an example from my own life. At one time, I felt that my political duty as a Gandhian demanded that I should court arrest, but my domestic duties bade me otherwise. As I was eager to go to jail as part of the independence struggle, it pained me that, out of regard for my family, I was not able to do so. I found myself in a dilemma, and I could not, of my own accord, see the way out. The situation was so unbearable for me that I had to turn to the master for help and relief. I therefore set out for Thiruvannamalai. After reaching there, I went and sat in the holy presence of the master. While I was sitting there, I began to wonder how I should place my difficulty before him, because I did not feel like broaching the subject verbally. I finally decided to pour forth my prayer from my heart in silence in the form of a plea for Sri Bhagavan to extend his benign help to me. I began to pray, and while I concentrated on my mental plea, I watched his radiant face and his sparkling eyes, which were full of love and kindness. And then, astonishingly, something like a miracle began to happen. Sri Bhagavan's face transformed itself into that of Mahatma Gandhi, while his body remained the same. As I stared at him with awe and wonder, the two faces, those of Sri Bhagavan and Gandhiji, began to appear to me alternately in quick succession. I felt my heart filling with joy, and yet at the same time I was wondering whether what I saw was real or not. I turned my eyes away from Sri Bhagavan and looked around me to see if others were seeing what I saw. Seeing no sign of wonder on their faces, I concluded that what I saw was a picture from my own imagination. I closed my eyes and sat quietly for some time. Then, as I began again to look at Sri Bhagavan's face, the vision immediately reappeared, but this time with a slight change. In addition to the two faces of Sri Bhagavan and Gandhiji, those of Krishna, Buddha, Kabir, Ram Das, and a host of other saints began to show themselves in quick succession. Now all my doubts vanished, and I began to enjoy this grand and divine show. The vision lasted about 5 minutes. My mind dropped all its worries, and I found myself able to hand over my problem to the capable hands of the master. Though he spoke no words to me, it came to pass that the problem was solved without infringing either of my two duties. In fact, both duties were fulfilled satisfactorily. I had another vision of Sri Bhagavan in 1943. During my visit to Sri Ramanashramam that year, I visited the temple of Sri Arunachaleswara with my family and a friend who was a devotee from Madurai. This is the main temple in Tiruvannamalai, the same one which Sri Bhagavan stayed in when he first arrived here. While we were walking through the spacious courtyards towards the Sanctum Sanctorum, I did not have any inkling of the wonderful experience I was to pass through when I finally saw the deity. On reaching the innermost shrine, we discovered that we were early, for the doors of the shrine had not been opened. We decided to wait there till someone came to unlock them. I leaned back against a pillar and began to think about Bhagavan's early life. Suddenly, my thoughts started to materialize physically as scenes from his early life began to appear before my eyes as vividly as if I were watching a cinema film. I saw very clearly Venkatraman writing the imposition in his uncle's house in Madurai. Leaving it aside, he sits bolt upright, closes his eyes and becomes absorbed in the more congenial practice of self-absorption. His elder brother Nagaswami is watching him and rebukes him for neglecting his lessons. Venkatraman then decides to leave the house. He takes 3 rupees from his brother's college fees and departs after leaving a short note. He reaches the railway station. He buys a ticket to the Divanam, gets into the train and sits quietly in one corner. A Maulvi who is discoursing to other passengers notices him and asks him where he is going. Scene by scene, I was enjoying this wonderful divine vision when the doors of the shrine opened and my vision was interrupted by the loud blowing of pipes and beating of drums. The people who were waiting with us stood up to get the Lord's darshan. I too mechanically stood up with the others. After this short interruption, my vision continued. Though the idol of Sri Arunachaleswara was before my eyes, I could clearly see Venkatraman getting out of the train at the Tiruvannamalai station. He then ran towards the temple. As he was coming nearer and nearer, the noisy music rose to a higher and higher pitch. Venkatraman entered the temple, ran to the shrine and embraced the lingam with both his hands. My feelings were ecstatic. My whole body experienced a divine thrill and tears of joy rolled down my cheeks. This state of sublime joy lasted a long time and was both indescribable and unforgettable. To be continued.